Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to the No Fly Zone with Greg Maybury on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, friends. Thanks again for joining us once again on the No Fly Zone here on TNT Radio. I'm your host and presenter, Greg Maybury. Today, we're going to be touching on a topic that perhaps doesn't receive the attention it deserves, and that's evil, E-V-I-L. For the purposes of today's discussion, though, we're going to consider only the temporal or earthly variety rather than the more spiritual or metaphysical variety. The latter is certainly a whole other ballgame, as our American friends would say, and it's perhaps a discussion for another time. But when we think of the more worldly evil, most of us probably immediately think of serial killer mass murderer types, you know, the Jim Jones, the Charles Manson, the Ted Bundys, et cetera, et cetera. But again, our focus today is not on that type of evil either, but on the more political manifestations that we've seen in our history and more recently, those that are manifesting themselves, particularly evident in the last 3 years, in my mind anyway. But to the extent that we ponder evil manifesting itself in political terms, obviously we might think of the Nazis and Hitler. We might think of the communists and the Bolsheviks, wherein we might think of people like Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin, etc. But the Nazis and the communists and their ilk certainly didn't corner the market on evil, not by a long shot from the grassy knoll, as I like to say. And indeed, many of us are of the view that both these ideologies, whose similarities, in my view, far outweigh their differences, are still going strong today, albeit under different guises, but with not completely different aims and goals. So in our discussion today, it is in particular that we're going to be looking at how that evil, that political evil, manifests itself in our lives today under regimes which are purportedly democratic, egalitarian, and free. Nominally, the very antithesis of those aforesaid ideologies. And we're going to be focusing, for the most part, say, on that form of evil today. And in helping us to do that is our guest, who is Harrison Cayley. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm pretty sure I am. Harrison is a senior editor for Red Pill Press, which bills itself as a small publisher of big ideas. He also co-hosts the Mind Matters podcast and is the editor of the latest edition of Andrew Lobachevsky's, wait for this, listeners, this is a bit of a mouthful, Andrew Lobachevsky's Political Ponerology, The Science of Evil, Psychopathy, and the Origins of Totalitarianism. Now, Andrew Lobachevsky was a Polish clinical psychologist who passed away, sadly, about 15 years ago. He was an expert on psychopathy, and he christened his field of study ponerology, which is really a synthesis of psychological, psychiatric, sociological, and historical studies on the nature and genesis of, you guessed it, evil. It's derived from the word poneros, or poneros in New Testament Greek. The word suggests an inborn evil with a corrupting influence, a fitting description of the psychopathy and its social effects. Harrison also writes the Substack, Political Ponerology. Harrison, welcome to the No Fly Zone.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Great to have you, and thank you for your time. Harrison, I want to start out, and first of all, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your own background and Red Pill Press. Who's behind the company? How did you become involved? And essentially, what's the sort of publishing philosophy or remit?
Well, Red Pill Press started as a Canadian company around 20 years ago, maybe a bit less than 20 years ago. That's how I first got involved. I personally was living in Edmonton, Alberta, and going to school. I went to school for music. I was taking jazz performance. And then after that, I decided I didn't really want to be a professional musician. I went to university for a year, taking philosophy and psychology, and then moved up to Grand Prairie and worked with a fellow named Tim Trepanier, and running an independent bookstore called The Rabbit Hole. And we also ran this small independent publishing company up there. So that's when I first became aware of and read Political Ponderologies, because that's one of the books we were publishing right around the time I started with the company. Now, since then, Red Pill Press has moved down to the United States, and we're a nonprofit publishing company now. We're part of the nonprofit Quantum Future Group, which was started by a couple, Laura Knight Yadchik and Arcadius Yadchik. We publish, Red Pill Press publishes Laura's books as well. And so we've been around 20 years, but we're a small company, so we don't have a huge catalog. We're pretty, we only publish maybe one to two books a year, if that.
All right.
And Ponderology is, we publish a lot of great books, a lot of, how do we put it? Well, a range of books, but they're all deep. Like they all deal with a topic that might not be covered by, you know, many mainstream publishers. Maybe you'll find some kind of alternative publishers that publish the type of books that we do, but books on esoterica, like religion, politics, some pretty far out books dealing with some strange subject matter. And Political Ponderology is a book we became aware of because of the author. The author found Laura Knight Yadchik's website page. She had a page up, you know, back in the early 2000s on psychopathy and pointing out the correlations she was seeing and the applications of the concept of psychopathy with politics. And so Dr. Lobachevsky got in touch with her and told her, oh, well, you know, you might be interested in checking out my book that I wrote back in 1984. And so she got a hold of it, and then we ended up publishing it.
That's a fantastic story, actually. And just the first publication date, of course, being 1984, should resonate with most people. And it's interesting, a couple of things, and I'll come back to 1984 just very quickly, but for listeners' interest, I came across Red Pill Press and I came across Andrew's work, of course, via reading an interview that Laura had done with a journalist, and she was talking about the book, and that's how I was introduced to it, and I was very impressed, as I noted with you in our earlier discussion this week. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed with Laura's analysis of not only Andrew's work, but her analysis on a whole range of issues, some of which are those sort of esoteric kind of themes and topics which Red Pill Press is publishing. And in fact, I have reached out, or will reach out to Laura, and hopefully have her on the show at some point in time to perhaps maybe even continue a conversation about Andrew's work, and also look at some of the other work that she has done. But you did mention the book, which I found it quite, I don't know if it was a coincidence, but the fact that it was published in 1984 is what we would call down here in Australia, perhaps a little bit spooky, particularly when we think about it now in the benefit of hindsight. But one of the words that has come out, we talk about ponderology, we've given that a sort of a bit of a definition. It comes from, you know, the basically New Testament Greek word for evil. The book, of course, is talking about evil, psychopathy, and the origins of totalitarianism. So we're talking about political evil here, but we're also talking about what we have called pathocracy. Which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Harrison, Andrew actually coined this phrase, or he fashioned this phrase. Can you can you give us a bit of an idea of what is pathocracy?
All right. So let me preface this with a little bit of background, because Lobachevsky went to school. He was going to university in like the late 40s in Poland, and in 1951. He started In 1951 at the university, they had introduced these indoctrination lectures. So these would have been classes in university where they taught Marxist-Leninist ideology. So they were basically indoctrination lectures. And he, as a psychology student, and several of his colleagues kind of realized that their new professor wasn't an actual professor. He hadn't even finished high school. At least that's what the rumor mill around the university was saying. But they kind of recognized his personality type. So you mentioned at the top of the show that psychopaths aren't always serial killers, but basically most serial killers are psychopaths. So basically this guy, he wasn't necessarily a serial killer, he probably wasn't, but he had the same personality type as one, that he was a psychopath. And that this was something that the generation prior to his, so basically his professors, had gotten together around the time when Poland became a communist country. And there was apparently a conference, and a lot of these psychologists and sociologists had gotten together, and kind of like in secret, they were having these discussions with each other, saying, "Well, this seems like it's a social or a macro social, so like a countrywide pathological phenomenon. It's literally as if the inmates have taken over the asylum." And so Lobachevsky, as being a young guy, several years later, like in the mid 50s, kind of became part of this underground research team or group of scientists that were studying this topic in secret, because if they were doing it in public, they would have been arrested, tortured,
absolutely,
killed.
And even many of them, I think, weren't they?
Many of them were. Mm-hmm. And so at some point in time, Lobachevsky was the last one. He basically lost touch with everyone else. So he kind of took it upon himself to collate and synthesize and put together all of the work that he had access to up to that point, which eventually became the book Ponderology. He had to go through a couple drafts in the process, one of which he says that he burned in a furnace after he was warned about a secret police raid coming.
Yeah.
And, But pathocracy itself, that was the term he came up with for what this phenomenon was. And so he used that word, he used just the very general combination of the two words, pathos and crassy. Yeah. So basically rule by the sick. And he chose a very general word, the sick, the diseased, because he and his colleagues basically noticed that the entire new ruling class, the small minority that were at the top of this structure, all had something in common. They all had basically some kind of personality or character dysfunction. This might be a personality disorder, or what he would call like a character disorder. He used that.
Yeah.
He used a little bit of weird terminology, because it was basically an Eastern or a European / Polish Eastern European psychiatric terminology, but basically these were all people that either had some form of brain damage or some kind of like hereditary personality disorder. So this is what we would refer to, at least like in the United States basically English speaking countries, as maybe antisocial personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder or borderline personality disorder. So pathocracy was basically ruled by the mentally dysfunctional, but not mental illness in the sense that most people think about it. So it's not ruled by the anxious or depressed or anything like that. That would be more, those would be more of mental illness in the terms in of the type that normal people suffer, like some kind of emotional trauma or emotional difficulty. These are actual personality disorders that negatively affect one's interactions with others, often in extreme cases to the point where their lives are completely debilitated, but not in many cases. You can have kind of a low-level subclinical personality disorder, and that's where you can get a subclinical psychopath or sometimes they're called like corporate psychopaths. So in North America, you've got guys like Robert Hare and Paul Babiak, who wrote a book called Snakes in Suits, which is all about psychopathy in the corporate environment. And that very easily translates over into psychopathy in the political environment. But there was no real focus on that. Like if you read the research on psychopathy throughout the 20th century, you'll find just a few references here and there to the you know, the overlap between politics and psychopathy. It's not something that the Western kind of psychological community spent much real time studying at all. And Lobachevsky, well, just a quick correction to something earlier. So the book wasn't published in 1984. That's when it was written. The problem was that he could never get it published. So once he finally got a hold of Red Pill Press, the first time it was actually published was in 2005, so around 20 plus years after he'd written it. So, and
you're talking about how it was published in English, then. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, and it wasn't even published in Polish. He'd written it, he'd come to the United States. Okay. He was living in the United States in the 70s and in the 80s. And so he wrote the book for like the second or third time in Polish, and then had it translated in 1985. But it was never published originally. I think he had it self like a version of it self published.
That was my understanding
Poland.
From my reading. Yeah. Yeah,
but that was later in the 90s, sometime that he got a printing of it done in Poland. But it was never a big publication, probably never in bookstores. There were very few copies available. So it was only really in 2005 and 2006 when it was published in any accessible format in Polish and English.
Hold that thought. We have to go to a break. We'll be back very shortly, Harrison, and continue this conversation. You're on the No Fly Zone. I'm speaking with Harrison Cayley of Red Pill Press. We're looking at the work of Andrew Lobachevsky and the nature and reality of political evil. We'll be back shortly after this break.
TNT Radio's John Helmer and George Eliason.
Well, let's start out with the U.S. plan first, the New York Times article, John.
The New York Times has picked up a collection of papers, approximately half a dozen of them, which are alleged to have been the presentation slides at meetings of U.S., NATO generals and Ukrainian generals in either Kiev or Lvov or in Poland within the last couple of weeks. The New York Times has led off with a story that classified war documents detailing secret American and NATO plans for building up the Ukrainian military were posted this week on social media channels. Now, it's not true. They're not secret. Almost all of the information isn't secret at all. It's open source. It's been well known in the open sources, and it's certainly well known to the Russian staff.
War of the Worlds with John Helmer and George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You're invited to join the pilgrimage to Bath, United Kingdom this June, where we will unveil a better way for health, freedom, and sovereignty. The Better Way Conference is a three-day solutions-based conference with more than 50 expert speakers from around the world. Our Master of Ceremonies, Neil Oliver, will take us on a journey through 8 inspiring conversations, addressing the issues that matter most to individuals and families around the world right now. Hear from speakers like Dr. Pierre Corey, Matthias Desmet, Dr. Vandana Shiva, and other leading international minds as we continue to co-create a better way forward. Panel hosts include James Corbett of The Corbett Report, Richard Vobes, The Bald Explorer, and The New Americans, Veronica Karolinko, and many more. Wherever you are in the world, you can join us in person or online for less than £40 or $50 for the full program. Get your full conference, single day, or virtual passes now at betterwayconference.org. Please join, share, and collaborate with us as we create a better way for a better world.
Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the No Fly Zone. I'm chatting today with Harrison Cayley of Red Pill Press. We're talking about the work of Andrew Lobachevsky, who was a clinical psychologist and an expert on political evil and political psychology, or psychopathology, I guess, is probably a more correct term. Before we just move on, I just want to direct listeners' attention to where they can contact Harrison. He has a Substack page called ponerology.substack.com. He writes that. We'll come back to that a little bit shortly and talk about what he's doing there. For those people who are on Twitter, he can be contacted on Twitter, raindogbone. That's Rain Dog Bone, as you say it, all one word. And he also co-hosts on YouTube the Mind Matters video. So you can do a search on those. So again, Harrison, welcome back again. We were talking before we went to the break about Andrew Lobachevsky's book, Political Ponerology, and we were talking about when it was published, and I guess it's probably neither here exactly when it was published, but in terms of what it actually offers us today in understanding the psychopathology, I guess, of our political leaders currently, but still harking back to that 1984 reference, I'm going to extract a quote from your introduction. It was a quote that you took from Orwell's 1984. And it was articulated by O'Brien, who was the antagonist in 1984. He said that power is not a means, it is an end. One does not establish a dictatorship to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. I guess the question that arises from that for me is, was 1984 an example of a pathocracy, albeit a fictional one?
Yeah, I definitely think so. So I chose that quote in particular in addition to a couple others from fiction, like one from one of Herbert's Dune novels, expressing the fact that
yes,
there's something else going on behind these revolutions, especially in the case of, you know, the time that 1984 was written, that, you know, inspiration behind that being like the communist revolution, the Russian revolution, and it's this idea that this was one of Lobachevsky's big intentions, and his warning is that there is something else going on behind this, that there is a psychological phenomenon going on that is not understood by the general public and a lot of scientists. And one of the reasons for that is that they haven't experienced it directly. They don't have a practical understanding of it. And he and, you know, a lot of the scientists that would have been, you know, in Russia or Eastern European or in Eastern Europe, they had this hands-on experience of what actually happened. They could, and Lobachevsky himself was kind of, his generation was ideally placed to basically have something of an education back before the university system there was totally changed and perverted along ideological lines. And the idea with revolution is that it's not his understanding of revolution in the context of pathocracy is that one of the concepts he describes is what he calls the ponerogenic association. So this is ponerogenesis, ponerogenic meaning evil generating, like the genesis of evil, yeah, the origin of evil. And a ponerogenic association is a group of people that basically generate evil. And so he talks about two types. You've got a primary type, which is like a criminal gang. This would be like a street gang or a criminal organization like the mafia, who are just like, everyone knows that they're criminals. And when you study them, you'll find you'll find a psychopathological component. Like if you study the mafia, you'll find that a lot of the assassins and the head honchos are actually psychopaths. But there's also what he calls a secondary ponerogenic association, and this is just a normal group that gets perverted along in a certain direction. So you might have, you know, a social movement that's maybe composed of relatively normal people or people who want to institute some kind of radical change. And those types of groups, because they often, they have an ideology and they value the goals of that ideology above everything else, that means they kind of loosen, yeah, their moral standards. And that allows for the entry of people who don't even have the movement's best interests at heart. So you might have these free riders and these people exploiting the energy behind a movement to gain power for themselves. So this is kind of the essence of the Orwell quote, where it's like there are people like a kind of political psychopath who wants power, who wants to rearrange the world in a way that will be conducive to their own, basically the way they want the world to be, where they could get anything for themselves that they want with no responsibility, yeah. And they can kind of slave other people in order to do so. And they'll basically use the energy of the movement to ride to power and exploiting everyone in the process. So that's why in the case of the Russian Revolution, it's like the revolution turned on its own because the people that were basically in charge of the movement, in charge of the Bolshevik Party, that were, you know, they were kind of nasty people and didn't really care about the people who were actually even ideological communists that actually believed that this was a good thing and that they were going to do something. It's like they used their own idealism and their own even their own desire to kind of take over it by any means necessary against them, to the point where by the 30s, you know, well, even before then, but within the first 15 years, there were purges against all of these, yeah. all the original revolutionaries. So there's something going on, and it's kind of that Trojan horse. It's a psychological Trojan horse where psychopaths basically infiltrate social movements and then steer them in a direction that isn't even in line with the original goals of the ideology or the social movement. So this is what you can see happening, kind of like at a I think this is what we're seeing today, where we're seeing something like that in process. We see it both in the revolutionary movements, like in the ideological movements with activists, for instance, but we also see it happening within the existing power structures, whether it's the whether it's governments or the lobbyists that influence the governments, or world governance in the form of like the kind of WEF, Great Reset types, where you see how things, well, like you mentioned, things aren't the same they were 3 years ago, and they've changed over the last 20 years, over the last 30 years. Like it's sure. been a process of things just going bad. And so normal people watching that will wonder, well, just what's going on? Like, how did that happen? How did we get to the place we are now? And that's kind of what I believe Ponerology provides an answer for, is for how that happens. What are the processes that allow that to happen? And it's a long book. Like, there are a lot of things going on. So it's not like, it's not just a one issue book where it's like, oh, psychopaths are the reason. That's just one of the main ones. But there's all kinds of stuff going on, whether it's, through propaganda, the change of language, you know, the influence of various groups, the kind of secular cycle that we're a part of, the kind of rise and fall of civilizations, the immiseration of people, and the widening of kind of of inequality, and how all of these things kind of contribute to creating the conditions for essentially what we're seeing today, which is the corruption of systems of government to such an extent where things will change completely. And this was the warning, is Lobachevsky's basically saying, if people don't understand this, if societies don't understand this, then they're basically there's a strong chance that they'll experience what we experienced, and to be kind of taken over completely by a government that cares nothing for you, and that is that is founded on lies and torture. So that's kind of the direction that we're going in.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite right in pointing out it's certainly not an easy read. But by the same token, it's, what he does say resonates very much with what's happening now. So for those people who are attuned to what has been going down in the last 3 years particularly, and have perhaps only in the last 3 years started to realize that something definitely is wrong with the way that we are governed, not just nationally in our own countries, but the way that the whole world is governed, and not governed by governments per se. We're talking about non-government institutions and organizations. You mentioned the WEF, there's the WHO. There are all manner of these different kinds of organizations and groups and movements that are shifting the whole political environment. You mentioned in your introduction, for example, and this harks back to your analogy about the Trojan horse. You mentioned about social justice ideology, the gender theory, critical race theory, and the ever-growing list of what you call academically questionable studies departments, which you see as a Trojan horse. And you go on to talk about how this supposedly promotes, we're told that it promotes diversity, equity and inclusion, DEI is the acronym, but enforces instead strict ideological conformity, inequality and exclusion of those who disagree. Now, again, this is where, for those who have been looking and examining what has been unfolding in the last 3 years, it seems to me that it's fairly obvious. You then go on to say, if people have the temerity to dissent, you'll be found guilty of discrimination or, to use Orwell's term, thought crime. And so you continue to go on, and you will have, if you go down that path, you prove yourself not diverse enough to be included, all in the name of equality. And I love this line, Harrison, its logic is Kafkaesque and its morality is Orwellian. And again, you could apply that not just to critical race theory, you could apply that to things like climate change, you could apply it to the COVID phenomenon and the narrative around, we need to have vaccinations to get rid of this virus. There are so many other issues around which this kind of thought process, which is imposed on us, that people buy into. Would you agree that sort of this scenario is playing out in numerous other areas, across the political realm?
Yeah, I mean, there really isn't an area that it's not playing out in. That's not the way I see it. So it's coming from all directions too. So you see it coming from, there are two kind of ways of looking at revolutions. You've got revolutions from above and revolutions from below.
Yeah.
So a revolution from below the prime examples are the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution. And then you've got revolutions from above, which are changes from within the existing power structure. So we've got both going on. We've got their work going on in concert. So we've had kind of revolutions from above where from the outside, you'll basically see a continuity for the last 100 years in Western governments, where as far as appearances are concerned, you've got the same government structures, you've got the same kind of people that are coming in and out of government, but something has changed. And then on the other hand, you've got coming from below, from kind of the activists, you've got this really this pathological, like pathocratic ideology that has that has taken prominence. And so you've got basically society is getting hammered from above and below. And it's a very strange phenomenon. Like, I don't know if it's even comparable to, probably the closest thing would be, like Mao's Cultural Revolution, where you had, Mao already had power for 15, 20 years by the time of the Cultural Revolution, and yet he kind of instituted his own revolution from below within. And so that was probably the closest where you had both, getting hammered by both sides, basically. And that's kind of I think that's pretty much what we're seeing today. So you have it from the activists. And so, like you said, it's not just critical race theory. You've got that whole kind of woke ideology or Marxism, as my friend on Substack, John Carter calls it. So you've got all of the studies departments, right? So you've got queer theory and gender theory and race theory and all of the kind of like all the studies departments that James Lindsay is famous for, trolling with his papers, his grievance study papers with Helen Pluckrose, I don't know how many years ago that was, 5-6 years ago. And then you've got, but this then plays out like that ideology is pretty much weaponized by the WEF. So you have this kind of combination of wokeness and climate change, in addition to then all of the ESG and DEI and SDGs, the development goals, the UN development goals, and they're all kind of tied together. So basically the UN, like the Agenda 2030 is intimately tied with woke ideology, and they all seem to be going in concert in the same direction. So all of these things are tied together, and it's so much a part of of pretty much every part of our lives. So that's why you see the main conflicts that you see on social media, the main talking points that you see from politicians at all levels, from local to national to international. They're all kind of going along in lockstep, and all of these are kind of pieces of a puzzle, pieces of a machine that is basically, they're all of a piece with each other, and they all coincide in some strange way, and they're all like, so whenever you look at one aspect, all the other aspects are kind of tied to it intimately.
Exactly.
So it's a very strange thing.
We have to go to a break very shortly, but one of the things you've just raised there is just the overwhelming amount of things that are happening in the world at the moment, whether it's to do with race theory, whether it's to do with climate change, whether it's to do with what's happening in Ukraine. And you've got this enormous polarization that's taking place, you know, and this been most evident, of course, I guess, or certainly quite evident over the issue of vaccinations and mandated vaccinations and these sorts of things. So you've got this incredible divide between people, and people simply just don't seem to be able to have the time or the energy to sit down and sort of work through some of these issues. They're so entangled and intermingled, like you said, that it's a struggle for people, even your average, you know, person with some critical thinking skills, to sit down and take the time to unravel it. And that's been my own personal experience. And it's a work in progress just for me, for somebody who is trying to sort of make sense of it. We'll go to a quick break, Harrison, and then we'll come back and continue this conversation. You're on the No-Fly Zone. I'm speaking with Harrison Cayley from Red Pill Press. We'll be back shortly after this break.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, isn't this special? Apparently, there is a red alert for a magnitude 9 mega earthquake off the Pacific coast, as a crack has been discovered in the 600-mile fault at the bottom of the ocean. Now, this hole, just 50 miles off the coast of the United States state of Oregon, is spewing hot liquid that scientists warn could spark a magnitude 9 earthquake, and that, of course, would devastate the west coast of the United States. But here's my question. They discovered this because they saw it with some sonar. Basically, they were just snooping around the area. How many more of these are inputting water that is 16 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than the surrounding water into the ocean in other places? And this is all part and parcel of this whole idea that I believe the warming of the ocean and the air is being caused by geothermal forcing. Let's just hope the earthquake doesn't go off. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Yeah, you've heard me tell you about some pretty scary stuff over the years. But now it's time for you to hear some really scary shit. Bowel cancer is our number 2 cancer killer. It kills 80 Australians a week. But the majority of people over 50 aren't using the screening kit that comes in the mail. Don't be afraid to test your poo. Go to stickittonumber2.com.au. A message from Cancer Council WA.
This is the No Fly Zone with Greg Maybury on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the No-Fly Zone. I'm speaking today with Harrison Cayley of Red Pill Press. We're talking about political psychopathology, the predisposition for our political and power elites to pervert the systems that we have in place that we have become used to over the years. And pervert them to their own ends. And Harrison, this is one of the things that really worries me about the future, in terms of not just my own family and personal situations, but, you know, really about the future of humanity. It seems to me as if, you know, this psychopathology that we are talking about, this that, you know, runs through the political realms, runs through the corporate realms, runs through the financial and economic realms in our society. They're hell-bent on completely upending the world as we know it. I mean, clearly pathocracy, to take that term, is essentially the complete opposite of a democracy. Pathocracy, of course, being that a system of governance, just to sort of reiterate for listeners, created by a small psychopathological minority that takes control over a society of normal or regular people. Now, it sounds to me like, you know, and again, most evidently, that has been the case in the last 3 years. The big driver, of course, behind this change are certainly the World Economic Forum. How do you see the World Economic Forum and the agenda there, obviously in concert with, the United Nations Agenda 2030, et cetera? How do you see this kind of fitting in with Andrew Lobachevsky's work? I mean, are we dealing with psychopaths here? Are we dealing with true evil? Are these people heading us into a completely and totally totalitarian regime, albeit one that's sort of the digital and the biological kind? Are we heading in that direction? Is this where they want us to go?
I think that I'd say that that's probably where some of them want us to go. And that's probably where they will end up taking us, whether intentionally or not. And what I mean by that is that the way I see the WEF in all of this is, let me first say that the foreword for the new edition was written by Michael Rechtenwald, author of Springtime for Snowflakes, and most recently, The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty. That's his new book. And so he wrote the foreword, and I wrote a review of Rechtenwald's book on my Substack called, I think the title of it is Apocalypse Mao, a review of Rechtenwald's Great Reset. And so that's where I'd recommend listeners to check out that article for more of my thoughts in depth on the WEF. But the way I kind of see it is that the kind of underlying philosophy or ideology of the WEF is what Lobachevsky would call a schizoidal ideology. So this would be an ideology that's betrays a kind of schizoidal mindset. And schizoid is another personality disorder. And it's a personality disorder that it's not quite like psychopathy, but there's a similarity. There's kind of like there's an overlap in the sense of kind of a lack of normal emotion. But schizoids or, as Ian McGilchrist or Louis Sassman would call it, are more, schizoautistic might be another way of putting it. And this would be like a highly analytical mind that doesn't really take into account, social conventions or social realities or kind of the emotional valence of experience of human experience. Yeah. So it's a very kind of analytical mind devoid of what we would consider the things that kind of, you know, common sense, things that we consider common sense and just basic humanity. So when you get to, when you look at the WEF ideology, there's this kind of neo-Malthusian strain through it that's very utilitarian in the sense that a lot of these people may actually believe that, the world is facing a crisis. Let's say it's a population crisis and then they'll come up with policies that are in line with fixing that, what they see as that problem. But these might be like, okay, well, we just need to eliminate, you know, a certain percentage of the population or de-develop the West because it's not sustainable as they go. And so you get this kind of totally anti-human ideology, and the point that Lobachevsky makes about these ideologies is that when you have an anti-human ideology, or you have an ideology that is kind of devoid of something like that's essentially human in nature, then just like we talked about groups being perverted by psychopaths, well, it's the same thing with ideologies. Yeah. Those are the ideologies that they adopt because it kind of matches their own pathological nature to a degree, but those ideologies, because they are at odds with reality, also are conducive to, well, they're just conducive to psychopathic rule because psychopathic rule is at odds with reality. And so with the WEF, you've got this this strange ideology that's kind of divorced from human reality. And whether or not the people behind it and acting in its interests actually believe the ideology, like believe that either climate change is going to kill us all and we need to change everything fast, or there's too much of a population and the only way to save humanity is to depopulate. Whether or not they believe that, the result of that is going to be an increase in this, like, this very totalitarian, authoritarian world governance structure, because that's the only way that you can implement policies like this. So it's kind of a natural result of the nature of the ideology, but because it already goes in that direction, it makes it very easy for the kind of cynical, psychopathic operators to then just say, okay, well, that works for us. So, you know, we don't really care one way or the other if it's true or not. It works, and we'll be able to gain our position in that world governance structure. And it's the perfect game. It's the perfect con, because look at how influential it is. Like, look how much power the WEF has and how much they've actually been able to accomplish. I mean, pretty much all of the world governments are on board with these SDGs, social development goals, and got the introduction of ESG, like environmental, social, and governance metrics in corporations. So you've got this merger of the corporate and the political world, where this power structure is kind of inescapable at this point. So that's kind of just in a nutshell how I see the WEF kind of ideology playing into all of this.
Well, Klaus Schwab, of course, openly declared that through the WEF that they'd infiltrated into all governments. The WEF ideology, they'd infiltrated into all governments around the world at the highest levels, from the prime ministers down in both parties, or however many parties there are in different countries. They'd infiltrated people or their people into key positions, not just in politics, of course, but in various institutions and organisations and in the corporate sector and the media particularly. And in fact, it's hard to see or imagine that there's any sphere where the WEF and its associated sort of affiliated organisations don't have some kind of a reach. And I mean, in a way, you've kind of got to give it to them. Okay, it's taken them, 50 odd years to get there, and this has been a work in progress, but it certainly seems now, in my view, to have really come to the fore in very obvious and very evident ways. Having said that, though, I'm still amazed, still scratch my head each day, perplexing over how relatively few people have twigged to this agenda and where it's going to lead them. In fact, I'm working on as I spoke to you this week, I'm working on a fairly lengthy article that talks about this, and in fact, it's going to use pathocracy in the title. So this really puzzles me as to how and why people still are very seemingly complacent about and compliant with what is unfolding. And in particular, when you look at things like, the adverse events that we're seeing from the vaccines, you would think that something like that, that impacts on people personally and, impacts on their family, that they would begin to start questioning, the whole vaccination mandates and the whole vaccination regime. But, there's probably quite a few people that are doing that, but they're, maybe not enough, because we still, the countries are still pushing it. So I guess, really it just beggars belief in my mind that people can't see what is actually unfolding. And I guess this is where Lobachevsky's work can give people some insights into understanding. And I think a lot of this has to do with people's resistance the idea that, you've got all these governments around the world that are, moving in this one direction. And, of course, for a lot of people, that smacks of conspiracy theorizing. But, again, that has become, patently obvious if you want to look at it like that. And I guess, this is where Andrew's work will you know, be very useful in helping people to understand, you know, why is it that these people are moving in this direction, if we can actually just get over the fact that we are moving in that direction. But what I wanted to talk to you about is you mentioned your Substack page earlier on. Harrison, can you tell us a little bit more about that? You mentioned one article. Are you, given the name of the actual Substack page, is it your sort of aim with that to kind of continue or to keep the Andrew Lobachevsky's legacy alive? Is that sort of what you're trying to do there? You've taken that title for the for your Substack page. Is that what you're attempting to do with that?
Yeah, that's one thing I'm attempting to do. So basically, I use it as a way of introducing concepts from the book to new readers. I try in new ways, using contemporary examples, or whenever I find a new source that might get across a particular point, I kind of share it. So it's basically a way of summarizing and presenting the concepts from the book in a form, usually in fairly short articles, but some extensive ones. I also use it as a way of continuing the process of editing the book. So, you know, I included a ton of footnotes in the book with the latest research and kind of supporting sources for a lot of the stuff that Lobachevsky talks about. So I'll write essentially extended footnotes for the book on the Substack. So I just recently read one of Peter Turchin's books. I'm a huge fan of his. I read the book War and Peace and War. So basically I'll find some quotations and link them to Ponderology, like some of the stuff that Lobachevsky writes about, point out the contrasts and the similarities and how different perspectives kind of support Lobachevsky's work. I'm also publishing an initial translation of another of Lobachevsky's book called Logocracy, which is his kind of his presentation for a new form of government that he thinks would be a better form of government than the ones that we have currently. And generally, I do book reviews, so I did an extensive book review and summary of Matthias Desmet's Psychology of Dictatorship, or was that what it? Psychology of Totalitarianism. And
that's right,
yeah.
What were your thoughts on Matthias Desmet's work? It attracted a fair amount of controversy.
Yeah, no, I liked the book. I had one major issue with it, but that didn't detract from its other, its other positive points. I thought, like he on one page he basically dismisses the idea that psychopaths have any role to play in any of this, and I think aside from that, there's a lot to be found from the book, a lot that's resonant with Ponderology. So that's the main issue I had with it, is that he dismisses that for what I think are not very good reasons. And I think he just hadn't read enough of the relevant material on that specific issue to. So I don't think that claim was justified. But I thought that I've read a lot about the controversy, and I don't think that it's as big a controversy as people are making it out to be. I think that Matthias he's got a lot of good things to say, a lot of interesting things to say that are resonant with parts of Ponderology, right? I think he's missing an important part, but I don't think that detracts from the other parts of the book that I do agree with. Like I do think that mass formation plays a big role in Ponderogenesis, that Lobachevsky talks about it, but he talks about it in a certain context. Like there's basically more than one issue. So I like the book for its portrayal of mass formation. I just think it neglects the importance also of political psychopathy.
You said you wrote a book on a review of that book on your Substack page.
Yeah, a 6-part review, I believe, where I summarized kind of each chapter and went through and shared my thoughts on it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll go back and have a look at that because I sort of had mixed feelings probably about Desmet's work, and but again, I try and keep an open mind about these things until I've sort of explored, the various sides of it. But what would concern me is I've always sort of felt that, that there is this psychopathology that's sides of it, but that what would concern me is I've always sort of felt that, you know, that there is this psychopathology that's present in what's unfolding at the moment. And that's probably where he kind of lost me a little bit. And you've actually pointed or alluded to that being one of the faults of the book. But what I will do is I'll take what you just said on board and go back and look for those other points that that are useful. We'll have to finish up now, Harrison. Folks, I've been speaking with Harrison Cayley at Red Pill Press. You can catch up with Harrison on ponerology.substack.com. He's on Twitter at raindogburn, and he's also on YouTube at the Mind Matters video. Harrison, it's been great chatting with you. I have a million other questions that I'd like to pursue with you, but we'll have to wind it up now. And I do appreciate you making the effort, particularly given that it's very, very early in the morning over there. Do appreciate you making the effort to come onto the program today. We'll be in touch.
No problem. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for joining us.